It may not always feel like it, but the crime situation in South Africa is, at least according to police statistics, tentatively improving. Murders down, robberies down, sexual offences are down, car theft is down. Every major crime category in the country, other than kidnapping, is decreasing. And then there's commercial crime, which is exploding. Cases have doubled in a decade. So why isn't this a topic of national discussion? This is the story of billions of rands disappearing from ordinary South Africans, from pensioners, small business owners, retired teachers. It's a story about a system that seems almost perfectly designed to keep that theft invisible. And it's a story about what happens when the victims try to fight back. I'm Rebecca Davis, senior journalist at Daily Maverick. Let's start with the most basic question. When the police record cases of commercial crime, which is actually a very vague term, what does that actually mean? Turns out, nobody really seems sure. When you ask the police for a breakdown of commercial crime, what does it include, who's being targeted, where it's coming from, the data doesn't exist. SAPS confirmed this to us directly. The Hawks, who handle complex cases, published a breakdown of commercial crime cases in their most recent annual report, using 18 bewildering subcategories, including fraud with a stolen petrol card, while a separate category, labeled simply other fraud, shows losses of 396 billion rand from just over 1,000 cases in a single year. To put that into global perspective, that figure exceeds the FBI's total internet crime losses for the entire United States in the same year, 2024, for a country with an economy roughly 40 times smaller than the US. We asked the Hawks to confirm that number wasn't a typo. They confirmed it was accurate. Meanwhile, the South African Banking Risk Information Center, SABRIC, recorded over 2 million incidents affecting banks alone in the 2024 financial year. Over that same period, the Hawks investigated 1,461 commercial crime cases. These numbers are clearly not describing the same universe. The one area where we do have some concrete data is in banking fraud. And the evidence suggests that fraud involving bank accounts is quite likely to be one of the major drivers of the commercial crime epidemic. In 2024, SABRIC recorded nearly 98,000 digital banking fraud incidents, the highest ever, with gross losses close to 1.9 billion rand. Banking app fraud alone nearly doubled in a single year, from 32,000 incidents in 2023 to 64,000 the following year. The banks all say the same thing. This is almost always the customer's fault. Customers are unintentionally giving away the keys to their bank accounts via social engineering, phishing or vishing, where criminals call you pretending to be your bank and talk you into surrendering your credentials. Every major South African bank confirmed to us that according to their own analysis, 100% of digital fraud cases result from customers compromising their own security credentials, not from any breach of bank systems. Now, fraud experts largely agree. This is probably true for most cases. The common thread isn't superior hacking, it's social engineering. Criminals who have become extraordinarily good at exploiting the predictable ways that human beings and the institutions they trust behave. And artificial intelligence is accelerating this. Fraudsters now use AI to write error-free phishing emails, clone voices, generate deepfakes. Thanks to AI, fraud detection tools at banks are getting smarter too. But as the National Financial Ombud put it, these systems are inherently reactive. By the time they flag a problem, the money may already be gone. When South Africans lose money to fraud and try to get it back, they often discover that the bank is not their ally. Take Robert, for example. His wife was in frail care, completely offline, no internet banking, no smartphone. Her Absa account had barely been touched in 2 years. Then, in 2023, 3,000 rand started disappearing weekly via a debit order nobody had authorized. By the time the paper bank statement arrived, 9,000 rand was gone. What followed was weeks of obstruction. The fraud helpline sent him to a branch. The branch said only his wife could cancel the debit order in person. His wife would have needed an ambulance to travel. He returned with power of attorney, wrong letterhead. He returned again. He needed a doctor's letter too. He returned again. The manager was unavailable. By the time anything was resolved, 24,000 rand had been taken. 8 weeks of deductions could not be recovered, and what eventually broke the deadlock with the bank wasn't a formal complaints process. It was Robert's post on Hello Peter. Or take Miranda Young, a part-time Pilates instructor. She'd been a previous scam victim. Then ATM withdrawals started disappearing from her credit card account, a card that had never left her possession. Standard Bank told her it was her credit card and her PIN used. Then they told her, actually, it was her old debit card which had been used. Then they identified a third card whose numbers she didn't recognize at all. Three different letters, three different cards, 6 months of emails and phone calls, no recovery, no coherent explanation, and Miranda is now left paying off a credit card debt she never ran up herself, which is growing monthly with interest. And then there's the Cape Town businesswoman who had banked with Standard Bank for 37 years. 2.3 million rand vanished from her account in 2 days, paid to five beneficiaries she'd never heard of, with payment limits lifted without her authorization. The subsequent 25 days of institutional runaround was so grueling, she fainted at home and fractured her wrist. The National Financial Ombud, the last resort for fraud victims, fines in favor of the banks 4 out of 5 times. Now, there's a public perception that comes up again and again when fraud victims describe what happened to them. They'll say, someone at the bank must have been involved. The banks deny this emphatically and consistently. No employee can unilaterally override security controls, they say. But court records over the past few years alone tell a more complicated story. There was the former FNB employee sentenced to 5 years in prison after using her own credentials to divert all OTPs from a 68-year-old customer's account to herself, then using a second card she'd created to drain 245,000 rand over 3 months. There were 14 people, including a former Nedbank forensic investigator, someone whose job was to catch fraud, who were arrested in connection with an alleged 157 million rand scheme involving the redirection of funds from accounts already under investigation. Former employees of Absa and Standard Bank appear in similar cases, and these are the cases that were detected and prosecuted. The question of how many weren't is unanswerable because the data doesn't exist and the institutions that hold that evidence won't share it. When fraud victims or their lawyers request the technical investigation reports from the bank, that's the audit logs that would show exactly what happened, which device accessed your account, how unauthorized beneficiaries could have been added to your account, banks routinely refuse. The justification for this is that releasing this information is in violation of privacy laws and could reveal vital security information. Now, the information regulator told us this position may not be legally sustainable under PIA, but in practice, victims have no mechanism to force disclosure without an expensive, slow legal battle. And when banks do reimburse fraud victims, which they sometimes do on their own terms, they require the victim most often to sign a confidentiality clause. You can't tell anyone what happened or how much you received. Breach that agreement and repay the money. One victim's daughter called it exactly what it is, shut up money. And this is quite probably one of the major reasons we know so little about financial crime in South Africa, because financial institutions like banks are so bent on protecting their reputation above all else that the media and the public never gets a sense of how risky banking actually might be these days. Now, the frustrating part is that the current levels of bank fraud do not have to happen. And one of the ways we know this is that there is one South African bank that claims to be the only bank in the world never to have experienced a single case of either card fraud or phishing. That's Bank Zero, a digital mutual bank launched in 2021, which built its entire technological architecture around the assumption that customers will eventually give away their credentials and designed so that this doesn't matter. The bank has biometric verification for any new device. It has employees who are structurally unable to transact on a client's behalf. It has a card system that detects when chip data is being presented through a magnetic stripe, which is the core mechanism behind card cloning, and blocks it automatically. Not one Bank Zero employee has ever been dismissed for committing fraud against a customer. But the caveat here is that Bank Zero only has around 200,000 customers. Absa, Standard Bank, FNB, and Nedbank each serve tens of millions across every income level and degree of digital literacy. The bedridden pensioner, the cash-dependent informal worker, the small business owner who learned banking before the internet existed. Bank Zero hasn't reached these customers and may never fully serve them. But the existence of Bank Zero and of Discovery Bank, which also eliminates insider risk through structural design, proves that these design choices are choices, not inevitabilities. One of the simplest potential reforms to the South African banking system is barely discussed. When you send an EFT in South Africa, the name you type for the recipient is never verified. If you send money to the wrong individual, that's on you. The payment is processed on account number alone. But in the UK, for instance, name matching on transfers has been mandatory since 2020. That system just doesn't exist in South Africa. There's another regulation the UK has introduced. If a fraudster tricks you into making a payment into their account, for instance, by phoning you and pretending to be from a bank's fraud department, which is very common in South Africa too, you have to be refunded by the bank up to a maximum value of 2 million rand, unless it's a case of gross negligence on your part. The effect of this is that UK banks have a direct financial incentive to make sure fraud doesn't happen and to very closely scrutinize who sets up new accounts and for what purpose. Again, there is no comparable mechanism in South Africa. Bank fraud is effectively made the customer's problem, not the bank. And while bank executives say that banks are often unfairly villainized and are really doing their best, it's hard not to forget that last year alone, the top four South African banks recorded combined headline earnings of over 135 billion rand. What we're left with, ultimately, is a situation where commercial crime in South Africa is clearly out of control, but the hawks, the NPA and the police don't even seem to have a shared understanding of how to define the crime category, let alone what's driving it. The criminal justice system is clearly doing almost nothing meaningful to stem the problem, while the institutions most affected, like banks, have a really powerful incentive to keep as quiet as possible about it. This lack of transparency isn't incidental to the problem, it is the problem. And until someone is required to change that via legislation or public pressure, ordinary South Africans will keep losing billions annually from their bank accounts.